John J. Massey was the name of my friend, a world-class bow hunter and guide, as well as a primitive bowyer and arrowsmith. Jay died of cancer in 1996. Though he professes to have felt pity for the doll ram, what Jay had was a profound respect for everything that was part of the natural environment. He let the ram live because he understood that all life is sacred, and he didn't kill simply because he could. What separates a Jay Massey from anyone who can kill 31 horses? The obvious answer is a respect for life, a respect for all living things. And how does one gain or learn that respect? One hopes it is by example. Unfortunately, that's how arrogance, hatred, prejudice, and a long list of other undesirable traits are taught and learned as well. There is a black beetle who lives in our house. He wanders aimlessly about, but I'm sure he knows where he's going. Perhaps he's looking for a companion because so far he's alone. We've named him Bailey, and we allow him the run of the place. A time or two I've picked him up and placed him out of the way of our foot traffic. I suppose it would be easy to toss him out into the yard where the blackbirds and magpies are waiting. Our daughters are curious about Bailey, and one of his appearances elicited a strident, "Oh, yuck," and a few semi-horrified screams. But by and large, they tolerate him because we adults do. One of them asked if he was still around because he hadn't put in an appearance for several days. Amazingly, he seems to have outwitted the bat that was flying around in our family room a few days ago. I tried to coax the bat out through an open door, not sure exactly how such a thing could be done. The bat hid someplace in an unreachable crack or crevice in our log house, and my search with a flashlight yielded no clues. Then he or she flapped through our bedroom one night. Putting on work gloves, I tried to catch him or her as he or she cavorted about the room while my wife sensibly retreated beneath the covers. The bat finally alighted on a log wall, head down, of course, and I was able to grab it. The bat was not pleased at the turn of events and let me know and know in certain terms with a series of low squeals as I tossed him or her out into the night. It would have been just as easy to attack the bat with a fly swatter. But strangely, at the moment I was about to grab it, I felt as though my grandparents were watching. And as I watched the bat fly off into the cool night air and turned to walk back to the bedroom, I felt taller somehow and at peace with the world. It's amazing and reassuring what a little respect can do. What kind of examples influence the killers of 31 horses? It is enough to say that those examples are not remotely associated with respect. And to ask whether any segment of their community or society in general nurtured or encouraged their personal values. While horses have been a part of North America for several hundred years, they number in the thousands and their range is now predominantly public lands in several western states. They've been harassed and killed since about the turn of the century, sometimes directly sanctioned and enabled by the federal government. One Mustanger recalls killing as many as 800 wild horses in a course of 2 or 3 days. Wild horses are now in direct competition with domestic livestock for forage and water, and are therefore considered by many ranchers as an expensive nuisance. That kind of local sentiment had to have had some influence on the killers of those 31 horses. Perhaps there was outright encouragement or sanction, or perhaps it wasn't necessary. The obvious, long-entrenched negative feelings toward the wild horses in some segments of the ranch community could have been regarded as implied support or encouragement. In any case, we are left with the chilling reality that wanton killing of wild horses is not a thing of the past, and that old attitudes are sometimes impossible to change. But even more frightening is the ominous possibility that the cold-blooded murder of 31 horses is a sign that we have lost the essential virtue in our relationship with anything or anyone we define as different. Respect. Some people regard the killing of 31 horses as nothing more than a regrettable incident, a symptom of Western mentality. Others think it is a violation of the sanctity of life. If there are those among us who can, in cold blood, shoot and kill a form of life obviously regarded not only as different, but also inferior, should we be surprised at horrible incidents such as Columbine or the dragging death of Willie Byrd? At the other end of the spectrum, the practice of respect doesn't grab headlines, but perhaps it should. A rancher strongly opposed to the reintroduction of wolves into Yellowstone National Park listened as fellow ranchers tried to shout down the person spearheading the effort to put wolves back into the park. With hat in hand, he stood and quietly reminded everyone present that she had just as much right to be heard. When a young Marine faces withering enemy gunfire to rescue a fallen comrade for whom he has loudly and frequently expressed his dislike, and is wounded severely in a process, another Marine is forced to ask, "Why would you do that for someone you don't like?" To which the grievously wounded Marine replied, "I may not like him, but I respect him." My grandparents gave me numerous reasons to respect them for who and what they were, and still are to me. Because of them, the story of Koshkalaka and the Deer Woman is especially meaningful for me. I've never literally seen the Deer Woman, but she's figuratively crossed my path a time or two. Koshkalaka resisted her because of the deep respect he felt for his grandmother, and I certainly can identify with that. But there was an instance in my early childhood when both my grandparents taught me a lesson about respect without saying a word. They had volunteered to clean an old rural church. We traveled to it in our horse-drawn wagon early one morning and spent the entire day working in the church. We swept the floors, mopped, dusted, and washed windows. That was the least of the chores. A swarm of honeybees had taken up residence in one corner of the building and could obviously be a hazard for any two-legged types. My grandfather built a small fire near that corner outside of the building and piled green grass on it to create heavy smoke. To my surprise, the smoke drove the bees from their hive, but they were none too happy at the disturbance, and my grandfather was stung several times. Some of the bees found their way inside and collected against the windows. My grandmother gathered them up by hand and released them out the door. Though she was stung a few times, she managed to clear them all out without killing or injuring a single one. Later, when the priest had learned of what happened, he scolded my grandparents and told them in no uncertain terms that they should have used liberal doses of insecticide to kill the bees. "After all, they are only insects," he said. In more ways than one, that episode had to have been the most painful lesson my grandparents ever taught. A lesson I remember each time I see a honeybee. Respect for his grandmother certainly did save Koshkalaka. Respect enabled Jay Massey to make a choice based on his reverence for life. It enabled enemies to set aside generations of animosity and conflict, and live in peace for a time. It enabled warriors to acknowledge the bravery in battle of an enemy, though his kind were especially hated for their arrogance. And it saved the life of a would-be horse thief, because it was an inherent part of his character. Of all virtues, respect is arguably the one that consistently creates itself in its own image. My grandmother suffered a stroke while still a young woman. A medicine man came to heal her. He prayed and gave her medicine and told her she would be well again and live a long life. But to remind her to live a good life, Wakantanka, the great mystery, would send someone to help her remember. That morning at sunrise, she opened the door to the sweat lodge and saw that someone, her helper. It was a tiny screech owl, also known as a burrowing owl because it lives with the prairie dogs in their burrows. The screech owl was sitting on a post. My grandmother asked me always to be kind to the screech owls because they were her helpers. I respected them for what they meant to her, and I never harmed one.